All right, guys, welcome back. And we're here again with another episode of the Five Figure Podcast. With me today, I've got my boy, Harold. Harold, say what's up to the people.
What's up, people?
We've got a lot to discuss today. Harold specializes in IT.
Yeah.
And we're going to dig deep into it. But first of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. You know how it is, just trying to survive this pandemic. It's been a bit hectic though, because even today I've had like a few problems with my wedding. So I'm getting married, obviously.
How's getting married, people?
Yeah, getting married next week. We originally had a venue.
Wait, what, next week?
Yeah, it's next week, man. That's why I'm saying it's so mad.
It's December already, isn't it?
It's December already.
I genuinely forgot.
Yeah, basically we planned it since the start of the year, and what happened is we had an original venue, and obviously lockdown happened, the venue closed down, and they told us that we can only use them next year. So we're like, okay, cool, you know what, we'll find a new venue. And then literally yesterday, after the second lockdown opened up, they were like, no, we can't do it.
Goodness.
So we had to find a new venue today, and been looking for places, but yeah, it's been hectic, man.
I can imagine. Wedding got pushed. Honeymoon as well.
Honeymoon cancelled twice as well. So we had the Mauritius in mind, and then they were like, nah, after a while. Like, I think they cancelled on us in October.
Gosh.
Gave us a full refund. Then we tried Mexico. Then Mexico got removed off the corridor list. Now we've had to go with Maldives. Like, fam, it's so mad.
I was actually feeling sorry for you before you said we just have to go with Maldives.
Yeah, we have to go with Maldives, man. I don't want to be in Europe.
Fair enough.
And I kind of want somewhere that's hot. So it was more like somewhere where there's a beach, you know, because this year has slapped me differently.
I hear that. Maldives is a shout. Never been on my list. So when you go and post everything, I'll see.
100%.
That's good. I'm glad you've got stuff sorted. Are you back to work now?
Yeah, I've actually been working since lockdown. I think when everyone went on lockdown in March, I was actually working from home in February.
Ah.
Yeah, just because someone had a COVID scare. So they were like, you know what, everyone just go home and work from home.
Fairs.
So yeah, I've been working since, just been, you know, doing the normal developing features for, if you don't know what I'm doing.
Let's start there.
Yeah, let's start there. So I'm a senior mobile developer at TfL, Transport for London, for those that don't know. And I make Android and iOS applications for them.
Come on.
So yeah, my day-to-day is developing features and apps for them, essentially.
So, sorry, when you say make, do you mean like, is this make? Like, if I look on an app, am I going to see
it? Yeah. So we released an app in August, which was called TfL Go. We released it on the iOS platform first. And it's, you can go download it right now. And I worked on that app. We're releasing the Android one next week, and I worked on that as well. So, yeah, it's quite a crazy thing, but been working on that since lockdown.
Is there like a... Because obviously, you know, there was a time when everyone wanted to develop an app because, you know, you can make money off it. Did you get any sort of commission doing TfL apps or...?
Nah, you just get your normal pay.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Like, anything you make... is theirs, so it's their product. They own it. So, and it's quite tricky as well because they give you their own machines to make stuff. So if you were to develop your own app on that, then boy, it's peak, because you develop your app, it could blow, and then they're like, you know what, you created on our platform,
and then that's
our,
it.
Yeah, our machines, those are our products. So yeah, it's a bit of a sticky one to make apps.
That's a bit deep. Is it something you do on the side, like? Outside TfL, do you actually make?
Yeah. Outside TfL, I try to look at opportunities rather than, just making things. I try to look at, what does the market need right now? Because the market is very saturated in terms of apps. Like, there's an app for everything.
True.
You can literally say, oh, I want an app that can, wake me up at this certain time and also tell my fridge a sign to cook up tea. Like, there's probably an app somewhere out there.
So that's pretty interesting you mentioned that. So in terms of opportunities, I don't know if you don't want to give anyone a heads up, but what kind of things?
So I'd say health tech, or that's like a really good place to look at, because there's a lot of things that could, or a lot of opportunities there. I'm thinking more. I mean, with even with COVID right now, health tech, like you saw how the guys that made the track and trace app.
Yeah.
Like,
right, don't get me started.
Yeah. That. Like, they made a lot of money for an app that probably was subpar.
It was so, very subpar. Yeah, so, I'm not getting into that.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. There's like a lot of opportunities in a market. And obviously some people will look at the ethical side and say, you know what, maybe you shouldn't be monetizing the whole thing. So
I didn't even think about it. You're a good guy.
It's things you have to learn. Like, you look at, there's a lot of apps you could make and there's a lot of things you could do with apps. That's why you have to kind of be ethical about it. Fair like enough. I don't know if you heard of the app called Telegram.
Sounds familiar.
It's basically like a messaging platform, and what happens is you can set your messages to disappear after a certain period of time.
Oh.
Obviously people made that thinking, yeah, you know what, this would be a cool idea, blah blah blah, it's unique. Then terrorists start using it and it's a bit like, because obviously when it gets deleted, it's gone. Like, no one can find out what you said. So it then became like a harbor for the dark web. Yeah. Obviously people doing hits and stuff, they'll just use that because they could say
that's
hit.
Actually so mad.
So when it comes to mobile development and a lot of web development, you have to be kind of ethical in what you make because, boy, anyone could use it.
Is that Telegram app still up?
I'm not sure if they've changed, but I think it's still up and it's still the same way. I think what happened now is that they cracked down more on the people creating accounts to use it.
So then they look into
the background of people creating accounts because obviously, and even without Telegram, like Instagram, how like someone was showing how if you were to create an account with a picture of a young person within like, I don't know, an hour, you'd get loads of requests from pedos and stuff.
Really?
And yeah, it's so mad. There's an actual video out there. I can't remember what it's called, but if you were to search it, you search on YouTube, and it's a parent who made it, and she just basically made it with a picture of a 13-year-old girl, and boy.
I think I actually saw that.
It's a mad thing. So yeah, that's why I say you have to be very ethical when you think about the opportunities as well, because you might think it's the next big thing, and it might end up being the next wrong thing.
Oh, that is actually crazy. I genuinely, like I said, I was just thinking of cashing out.
Yeah, you're thinking of cashing out.
I was thinking ethics. That's actually pretty cool. So you're doing software.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you needed computer
science. Yeah.
So there's computer science, computer engineering.
Yeah.
I'm guessing engineering is the hardware, and then science is...
Science is more about the theories and stuff, but in a sense... I wouldn't say you definitely need a degree in computer science. A degree in computer science or computer engineering would put you ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people who've actually gone into the scene without a computer science background. For instance, my mentor, he's also a mobile developer, and he actually did his degree in chemistry. and he was a chef after.
Oh, that's crazy.
I don't know how he got into... Actually, I think he said that he wanted to create an app because he goes duck hunting. So he wants to create an app that would, you know, help him out with mapping to go duck. Yeah, he's a very upper class guy, because I was like, who owns an island and who goes duck hunting, all of these things. But yeah, so when he created that app, he then thought, you know what, I actually like this, and then started creating more apps. Mm. And that's how he got into the mobile development field. And yeah, I know a lot of people who just, you know, focus more on making things. And then once they make the things, then they have the portfolio to move themselves into the tech field.
Oh, I see. Do you think that uni was worth it then? Do you feel like you would have been better if you just went straight into it?
See, I only think uni was worth it just because of, I guess, the people I met.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's through the people I met that I am where I am.
Yes.
They've been able to, you know, help me out with making myself a better person in terms of a developer, etc. I don't think it was worth it in terms of computer science itself, like, at all, because a lot of things you learn in a computer science module, well, I don't know about now, but when I was doing uni, it was quite old and outdated. They would say things like, oh, when the internet uses IPv4, I don't know if you know about that, but it's like, we're already using IPv4 and IPv6, so those things, you can't say when, because we do it. So it's very outdated, and it's more about the theory in terms of algorithms, etc. For me it wasn't worth it for the course, but it was worth it for the people, because the people I know are the people that, you know, make me want to strive to be a better developer, even make my own thing, because my boys have started a new thing. They started their own thing in San Francisco.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. I was about to ask. So I remember I was in the clubhouse. I don't know if you're on Clubhouse.
No, not really, but...
Everyone on Clubhouse. It's great. I'll get to that another time. But I was in the clubhouse room and we're talking. We just found ourselves in a room with like a lot of American people that are in IT. And everyone was sharing like their stories and we were all like being very open. So people were sharing how much they make. You know, and there's people there making like 200K. Minus, you know, stock options and all sorts of stuff.
Minus bonus and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the people in London, we were just like, what is going on? Like, we're being... Yeah, it was a bit mad.
Yeah.
So, like... Here, how much does software development pay?
So it depends. When I started working, I was a junior, and I was on 25K. And you know, I was doing the work of a senior, a junior.
Always the case.
It was just so mad because it was like my mentor at that time. He was a contractor, so he was on like $450 a day, and we were doing the same work. So. After a while, he left and he told them, look, you're going to have to raise Harold's salary or else he's going to go find somewhere else. He's not going to think about staying here anymore. Yeah. So yeah, I did talk to my boss about that. They were like a bit iffy about it. And then I went to TFL, did an interview. They really liked me. They offered me a salary that's basically 2.5 times what I was earning there.
And what we like to hear.
I was like, you know what? Yeah, so currently I'm at TFL. I actually got like a little bit of promotion recently.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, so my current salary is about 56K, almost 50,000.
That is, I absolutely love to hear it. Yeah. And everyone that's kind of spoken has kind of said something similar, like they've had a manager or a mentor like fight for them, fight their case. And I think that's always good to have because, you know, sometimes you might doubt yourself or sometimes you might feel like, oh, do I really deserve this?
Yeah.
To have someone that actually reminds you that you're doing to push for more is really good. So, like, I'm very glad that happened.
Yeah.
And then I was going to say, like, do you then, first of all, congrats on that little promotion.
That's it. Thank you, man.
But then, is San Francisco like the goal for, I know it's a lot of things for software developers. Yeah. Is that the goal for you? Like?
It was actually. Because back when I went in 2017.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's a crazy place in terms of opportunity because one of my boys, he was interviewing for a new role and the offers that he was getting was just mad. He was on the phone to about 5 different startups or something.
Yeah.
And first one was like, yeah, we'd offer you 130K. I'm like, huh? And this wasn't even a senior role. This was just like a...
Entry cover.
No, a mid-level role.
Oh, mid-level, my bad.
So I was like, okay, cool. And then he got a phone call from another one who offered him 145 plus, I think 30% bonus or something like that. And then he was like, okay, cool. And then just kept saying, okay, cool. And then I think the highest he got offered was about 150. So then he went back to the first startup and said, look, I've been offered 150 by this startup.
I love this game.
And then they were like, okay, we'll raise 160. And then he went back to the second one, offered him the 30% and said, look, I've been offered 160. And then they were like, you know what, we'll give you 165 with that 30% bonus. So yeah, once I saw that, I was like, I can't settle. I cannot settle, not in UK. So that was actually when I came back. So I think I went in 2017, end of 2017. I came back and I interviewed with TFL literally 2 months later. And then, you know, I was just like, you know, I have to go up because, boy.
No, that's a good boost. And when I heard about what those guys are doing in San Francisco, I thought to myself, like, or I even looked up, like, some boot camp prices. I was thinking, just get on it, you know, because, boy.
See, the thing is, boot camps can be good for some people, but in my honest experience, like, my experience, just focusing more on making things that can improve your knowledge of the... whatever platform you want to build on. Because there's many different platforms. You can be a back-end developer, which is more about database and stuff. Mm-hmm. Or you could be a front-end, which is mobile or web. And just if you say, all right, cool, I want to be a mobile developer. I want to be a website developer. Just start making websites. Like, even if it's a website to, I don't know, for instance, start bookings or something. Yeah. Just something very simple. Or even a calendar website. Yeah. Start making things and then start building on the knowledge you have of those things you've made. Because... for instance, my first job, it was quite interesting. So I actually got the job for a recruiter, and she hadn't told me that it was a senior role. So I actually interviewed for a senior role whilst being a junior. Like, literally, I just graduated, but I didn't know. So I was sitting in the interview room, blah, blah, blah. I explained the different projects. I'd worked on loads of different projects. I had no experience, no actual formal experience.
Just doing it on your own.
I literally just had projects. I explained different apps, and they looked at it and they were like, "You made these?" I'm like, "Yeah, from like by myself." And they went, "What?" So literally that there and then, they created a role for me.
Oh.
Yeah, so they weren't thinking of hiring a junior. They were only hiring a senior. But then when they saw my potential, because of the different apps I've made, they said, "You know what? We'll create a role for you and we'll hire a contractor to actually do the work so you can learn off the contractor.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And then we can move you into the senior position." So they literally changed their game plan from, you know what, hire a senior to actually hire this junior, hire a contractor, and then this junior can then move into being a contractor through the guidance of this contract.
That's pretty dope. That's actually really, really dope. And I feel like that is something that, you know, we kind of need more. I feel like when you go to interviews, you need to be able to present
something,
you know, some projects, some numbers.
Yeah.
You know, I've saved this amount for the company. Yeah. I've designed this. So, whatever the case may be. I think that really puts you in a strong position. I didn't do that for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think, especially with something like IT, that does seem really, really key.
It is really key. Yeah.
So to get to the stage of like a contractor where, because, you know, sometimes I just see the jobs online.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're going to pay you 800 a day. And I'm thinking, to do what? Yeah. To do what?
So for me, the main difference I've seen between full-time people and contractors is that contractors know their stuff. Like, they know how to...
In and out.
Yeah, in and out. They know how, like, if they're told a task, they know how to get from A to B. A full-time person might not know, but because they're full-time, they're given the leverage of, you know what, go back out there and learn then do it. So in terms of being a contractor, I'd say the best way to be a contractor is to just get as much experience as possible so you know everything. Because with doing anything, it's repetition. Like, for instance, with making apps, it's repetition. You have to know how to make a button, then know how to color the button, then how to do this. And you know, you get quicker with doing those things. So then when you're a contractor, they'll be like, "I want you to make this." And you already know how to get from, you know, A to B or A to C, because you know how to get from A to B and A to and B to C as quick as possible. So yeah, with contractors, they need to know their stuff. But you also can, I've seen people wing it as well.
I think everyone.
I've seen a lot of people wing it. In fact, I interviewed a guy who, he had like 20 years of experience, and the quality of things he was making, I was like, "Are you sure you're a contractor?" Like, in my head, I'm thinking, "Are you sure you're a contractor? Because you have 20 years of experience. You've worked at like prestigious places like Nokia and all that." But what you're showing me right now is it's not adding up. And it made me understand that, like, some people wing it, and they wing it by just doing the bare basics.
Yeah.
You can do the bare basics and get away with it, because that's why they call tech the bubble. Because it's like, it's weird. Like, you could get away with a lot considering what you know. So for instance, for me, I like to make my apps quality. Like, I like to make it that when you see it, you know this is a modern app. This is new.
Yeah.
Some people like to just make an app and that's it.
Just like, leave it like that.
Leave it like that. And you use the app and the app is like buggy or all these things. But they've done their job, right?
Yeah.
They've made you the app, did blah, blah, blah. So that's what the contractors you wing it tend to do. It is a very easy thing to get into. But I think more people are starting to look back into full-time just because of IR35. Which is just like, it's a new legislation that got added. Like,
I'm glad you saw my face that you had to break that.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
so it's a new legislation just to, basically, it's for contractors.
Okay.
So if you're a contractor and you're inside and you're working at a company inside IR35, you basically get taxed differently to if you're outside.
Ah, I see.
So I think it's not as beneficial because I think you get taxed like a full time.
Okay.
So that's why more contractors are like, you know what?
For permanent roles.
Yeah, because now permanent roles, they're boosting the base salary to make up for that. And, you know, it might be easier to just go to a permanent role. And if you're going to get taxed like a permanent employee anyways.
Might as well do it.
So, but there are still companies hiring. And you specifically have to say outside IR35 because...
I hear that. So with your apps, like what you said now, you make an app, some people just make it and leave it.
Mm.
Is it something that you constantly go back to develop, for example, like if you have to update it?
Yeah. So by nature, I'm a perfectionist. So when I make things, I always want to make sure that, you know, if, for instance, you tell me to make something that can help you, you start tapping buttons and you can count things, I'd be like, okay, cool. What do you want? Like, what do you want that user requirement to be like? Do you want it to be just when you tap it, it'll count how many times you tap? Or is it when you tap it and let's say you tap every fourth time, it'll count? Like, just things like that. Yeah. I'll start asking the bare basics of questions, because at the end of the day, I want you to have your app and have it well so that you can say, actually, I'm proud of this app that Harold made for me. But yeah, some people will just be like, you say what you want, but you don't actually know what you want.
Yeah.
And the person developing it for you might know that, but he's just going to be a prick and say, you know, I'll make the app and then that's it.
Just pay me. Leave it like that. Yeah. Enough, get the money.
And that's it.
So is there like the user experience, kind of user design aspect? Is that something that
So I've had to deal with that when I was working my first role. Like okay. I was saying, I was doing a senior, like I was doing user research, user design. I was speaking to like users, asking them, blah, blah, like, so how do you use this? How would you like to use this? Yeah. What do you think would be beneficial? All of those things.
Yeah.
You do that in a sense, but when you work in a proper company where it's actually detailed out, you don't have to do that. You actually have a team focused on doing
that.
And they will just, you know, pass through the requirements and say,
I see. Okay. So they'll pass it to you.
Yeah. Then. Literally they'll pass it to you and say, we've designed this page with user research in mind. Can you make it like this?
Okay.
And they'll ask you what is, you know, what is possible, what is not possible.
Mm, and then it's up to you to kind of take on the rest.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's really brilliant. So is there anything that you feel like is coming up? For example, I know you said you had an interest in like the Internet of Things.
Yeah, yeah.
So talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah, so the Internet of Things is this phenomenon where, you know, everything's going to be connected to the Internet. Everything's going to be kind of alive and knowing. For instance, if I had my phone would be able to know what the status of my house is, if my house connects to the internet as well. So I could be like, all right, my doors are open, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of things are already like that, where you have people who can, I saw a video, I don't know if you'd heard of the YouTuber Your Average Consumer.
No, but I'm going to have to look that up
now. Yeah, he's a cool guy. So yeah, he had his house made into a smart home. So smart homes are a subset of internet
things. I see, I want to do that as well.
Yeah, so it's quite cool. So for instance, my dream is that, you know, I get to a point where I make my own smart home, just because I prefer making things for security reasons.
Oh, so you don't want to like buy
one. Yeah, I prefer to make one. Just because when you work in mobile development or any kind of development, you start to see the kind of security risks and you kind of think, you know what, I can see this, but can someone else in the company see this? And then you start thinking, if I buy this from someone else, they might not have seen, like, you start questioning everything.
Yeah.
So for instance, with my smart home that I want it that, let's say I go to work and I've had a meeting, and the meeting's been like stressful because it's like, I don't know, some kind of director's meeting or something, yeah. I don't know. And I'm coming back home and, you know, my house has now seen my calendar and seen that I've had this meeting. And so as soon as I get in, the door opens up, music, like relaxing music.
Coffee maybe.
Coffee's already made. TV turns on and shows some kind of, I don't know, National Geographic or whatever, like,
yeah, just to calm
me
down.
Yeah, just to calm me down. It's just, you know, I don't have to think about doing those things myself. Yeah. It's done for me as soon as I get in. I can focus more on thinking, you know what, maybe I should have done this in work or, you know. So yeah, I want to make a house that's basically similar to that. It's basically like Jarvis, the Jarvis system.
Iron Man has.
Yeah, So, in that sense, I want to make something like that. But yeah, when I was talking about security, for me, it's something like, so we had a screening at uni where someone brought a fridge. No, I think it was a fridge or a door, I can't remember, but basically it's something that could be opened.
Yeah.
And literally right there and then, someone else is a student. He hacked into the thing and kept opening the door. So the guy was presenting it and he hadn't mentioned that, you know, he was open. Yeah. He didn't mention anything about security. So he just mentioned that. So it's pretty cool because you can press this button and then the door open. And we're all like, oh, okay, cool. And then the door opened again and closed and opened. And everyone's like, what? It's opening and closing. And he's like, that's not me. And then a student put his hand up and said, yeah, I was seeing if your security was, you know, up there in terms of make sure this isn't hacked. And the guy was just like, damn.
So is that not like every single thing we have? How do you avoid that? Like, because your phone, you know, laptop, PS5,
you know. So I think there's always a risk. I don't know if you can avoid it completely. There's always a risk. Yeah. I think the best way you can do it is finding either a source that you can trust well enough. Like, I know a lot of people trust Apple just because their security systems and everything else is always good. Just finding something that you can trust. For me, I don't know if I'll find someone I can trust. Yeah. Like, because the thing is about Internet of Things, there's no main brand out there. You don't know any brand that is...
Yeah, I only know Amazon doing that.
Yeah, and even then, like, the Internet of Things isn't the kind of concept I've talked about, because everyone started off with the speakers and then...
Lights. I know there's lights.
There's lights, and then that's it. It's just like you plug in the lights and that's it. It's, I want a system where it's the whole system, like a Hive system. You come to your house and your house is awake.
So how far away are we from that kind of Hive system? And also, how long will it take you to make something like that?
Them kind of things, for me, for a personal person, for just one person, it's probably like a lifetime, if I'm being honest. Because first of all, I need to get a house. So in terms of getting there, I don't think we're that far off. Because when I was at uni, we were very close to it in terms of, I saw a few startups that were trying to do that idea, but unfortunately they didn't really
pan out.
Yeah, they didn't really pan out well, because the main problem with it is that when you have a house like that, you need like a giant server room. Oh. Yes. And that in itself is power, heat, like electricity, like all these different things. You get like the room being hot all the time. So that means you need to get coolers in that room. Yeah. Like this, it basically becomes like a mini business. There's a lot to consider. So that's why it didn't pan out well. The startup, I don't know what happened to them, but they disappeared. And yeah. In terms of, if there was a big brand, like, I don't know, Samsung or someone to actually say, you know what, we're going to focus on making a Hive system that, you know, isn't costly, doesn't use that much power, et cetera, then maybe I would look into
Fair enough. So with this, I want to go back a bit, just because I feel like you've said so many interesting things, and I feel like if someone was trying to relate, so if someone listens to all this and says, you know what, I really want to get into the software, how long do you think this would take? Like, obviously, you wouldn't advise a person to go back to uni and do 4 years. What kind of options, like, what do you think they should get to it?
If I'm being honest, I think YouTube videos are the best way forward.
I've heard that as well,
actually. Yeah, because either YouTube videos or Udemy. I don't know if you heard of Udemy.
I've heard of Udemy, actually. Yeah. You mentioned that the other day.
Yeah, Udemy is quite good in terms of resources. But YouTube is probably the best resource because it's free. So you can literally just find anything you want.
And just start going.
And it depends on what you're interested in, because you could be interested in, like me, in Internet of Things. You could just Google or YouTube that and you'll see loads of videos explaining different... There probably are new companies out there that are doing it, and someone's probably made a video on it. And just because there's so much knowledge on YouTube, you can find anything you want.
To be fair, I did see a video of a guy who had the whole internet. I don't know how he did it, but he told his Alexa, he programs Alexa to like wake him up. So Alexa would wake him up and then put on certain lights at a certain brightness. And make some coffee. I don't know, just best or switch on the TV to a certain channel.
Yeah, see, so that is like that is what I mean by we're almost there, but it's not quite there, because that is Alexa connecting to other devices, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if Amazon owned, like, it was an Amazon house. You came in and it's literally connected. Because with like, for instance, Alexa has, you have to give Alexa permission to connect to like your lights and blah, blah, blah. You have to buy smart home lights.
Yeah.
But when you come into the house is fitted. Like, it knows everything.
So will it get to a stage where people are actually building smart homes?
I don't know when we will get to that, but we should be able to get to that. And hopefully when we do, people are very keen to take on. Because one thing that I know people will do is they'll be like, oh no, my house is going to kill me or stuff like that. Like what happens if, I don't know, the government locked down my house and blah, blah. And it's like, capital to anything really.
I think there is that risk. I think especially with technology, like you said, where... you know, things aren't protected. Obviously, you know, data is, we don't even know what's going on with our data. We don't read the privacy agreements. We just click it and go.
Yeah.
And literally Lord knows what's happening. But like you said, there's only so much you can do to protect yourself.
Yeah.
I remember, I don't know if it's happening to a lot of people, but like Outlook keeps asking me to re-enter my
password. Yeah, it does like, that, yeah.
It keeps asking me to do that. And then I enter a password for a website and Apple goes, this password has been involved in a data leak.
Yeah.
Change your password. I'm thinking, what? Yeah. Like, so, you know, I kind of lose track of security, but I can see why people would have that
mindset, that
fear. It's like completely trusting technology.
Yeah.
But like you said, I don't think we're far away from that.
Yeah, we're not far away. It's the same with, like, for instance, self-driving cars. People will be like, you know what, I'm never going to buy a self-driving car because I wouldn't trust it. Like, what happens?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people were... I think Tesla's now, like, a thing.
Yeah.
I think before it was like a, you know, wow, this is like some Iron Man car or something like that. But now it's like a thing. People just buy Teslas and I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
I have heard that you shouldn't not be in the driver's seat. Yeah. I've seen some pictures.
So what Tesla's done is that they've actually put, rather than self-driving, because there was an accident, I can't remember, I think it was like last year. And they've now changed it to quasi self-driving. So you should still be alert.
Behind the wheel.
So it's not actually fully self-driving now. They've actually taken that out of the thing.
Because I remember although they had the one accident and obviously it was pretty bad, but then people said like cars that aren't self-driving, there's accidents every day.
Yeah. You know?
So I think people do kind of relate like computing with like perfection.
Yeah.
Like a calculator is never going to make a mistake. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I think people do have that.
I think it's also the bad connotations of tech that we've had. Like a lot of films, the tech always goes wrong.
Terminator.
like it's just, I can't remember what the original one was when, I think it's called AI or something.
I remember that actually.
With the red dot.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, people always relate it to that and they'll be like, oh, the alien's going to, or not alien, but the tech is going to come to life and it's just going to start thinking, it's going to become a sentient being and, you know, try and kill me off. And it's just like,
I think with the talk of AI and like obviously machine learning,
it
does give that not possibility, but it makes it appear as though like that is a possibility.
And the thing is, I do get that, but AI isn't in all of tech. That's like AI is a different section of tech. So trying to put AI into other things is a bit weird because people try to mask onto other things like, oh, this could happen in this. Yeah. No, that's not AI. So it won't happen.
Do you have experience with AI?
Yeah. I actually did my third year dissertation in AI.
Okay.
But yeah, it's quite interesting because it's like, you know, you give, well, it depends on what kind of AI you're talking about. But the one I did was more about, I gave an algorithm a few pictures and I tried to, you know, make it that it could recognize a person from the different pictures.
I see.
So what I was trying to do, this was before Face Unlock was a thing. So I was trying to do Face Unlock.
Okay.
And then when I tried doing the Face Unlock, it was interesting because you had loads of different, like, there's not just one way to do it. Like you can give it to a program and the program will do like a whole list of calculations because that's how they do it. They calculate.
Yeah.
But there's different formulas for that.
I see.
So what happened is whilst working on that, it was something where I thought, you know, AI is quite interesting, but I'm never going to go down the field because it's like, there's so much research.
There's a
lot of research.
I can imagine.
Because you're literally always training the thing. Like you give it a picture.
Constantly. Learn.
Yeah. And you see how good it does. And if it does bad, then you have to change the algorithm again. And you have to read, like, it's long.
Oh man, listen, like, thank you so much for the breakdown. Thank you for everything. I'd have loved to talk to you a bit more about anime.
But
I trust you, we'll be back and we'll have that conversation again. 100%, but I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And obviously with the wedding, like, we're hoping everything goes well.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thank you guys for joining us. See you next time.